Today on Straight Talk Africa, the Republic of South Sudan celebrates its fourth anniversary of independence this week. But given the ongoing war and the devastating humanitarian crisis, is there really cause for celebration? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, July 8th. I am Shaka Sali. My colleague and social media reporter, Maria Majaro, continues on her special assignment in the Senegalese capital, Dakar, her home, sweet home. And today, we'll discuss and analyze what independence means to the people and to the government of South Sudan. And coming up later in our STA inbox, you, our audience, have weighed in on our topic through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments, and we'll reveal some of them later. But first, July has been something of a historic month for the people of South Sudan. And on Independence Day, July 9th, there is little to celebrate. My colleague, Paul Sisko, has more on the story.
As thousands of South Sudanese celebrate their nation's fourth anniversary, hundreds of thousands also mourn their war-torn homeland. It is a time, too, to remember Dr. John Kerang, the former rebel commander and first vice president to then-Sudanese President al-Bashir, died in a helicopter crash July 30, 2005. Kerang led the rebellion, ending Sudan's second civil war, and is widely considered the single most influential person in the nation's history. An interim constitution came into effect on July 9, 2005, part of the Comprehensive Peace Accord that paved the way to South Sudan's nationhood on July 9, 2011. Growing pain soon followed and exploded on December 15, 2013, when fighting broke out between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. Despite multiple peace agreements between the two powerful leaders and regional and international calls to stop the fighting, the killing continues unabated. A leaked African Union document earlier this year said both leaders should go and a transitional government be set up. Peace talks hosted by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, have repeatedly fallen short, and the United Nations Security Council has imposed sanctions on the country. UNICEF says scores of children have been abducted and are being used as child soldiers in the civil war. United Nations Human Rights Spokesman, Ravina Shamtasini.
For more than 17 months now, women, men, and children have been suffering from the effects of this man-made catastrophe.
Tens of thousands have died. It is estimated that 2.2 million of South Sudan's 12 million people are displaced. Both sides in the conflict are accused of massive human rights violations, and the civil war has created one of the worst humanitarian crises on the planet. It leaves the world's youngest nation with little to celebrate on its fourth anniversary of independence. Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now, for the latest developments regarding South Sudan, I am joined by my colleague, John Tanza Mabuso himself, managing editor and host of South Sudan in Focus, a Voice of America 30-minute weekday English language broadcast internet, which airs Monday through Friday at 16:30 UTC or 7:30 p.m. East African Standard Time. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Shaka.
How are you?
I am fine.
How does it feel, especially given that we are talking on the eve of the fourth anniversary of the independence of your homeland?
It just reminds me about what happened on, January 9, 2011, when the independence was declared. There was a air of jubilation. Everybody was celebrating. I was very happy because for the first time, I had something I would call a country.
On July
11,
2011. Yes. Yeah, I remember, of course, I had actually been to the country. I had flown to Wau. I had gone to Bor. And of course, everybody couldn't wait for that particular magic day. So what is it that people really expected and hasn't happened to them so far?
Well, I cover the country on a daily basis, and we speak to people from different walks of life. We speak to people in government control areas. We speak to people in rebel control areas. People are not happy. They want peace. They are saying this is not the country they voted for when they were voting for referendum. They were voting for a country where they will live in peace, where they will get services, where their children will go to school, where they will have hospitals so that when they are sick, they are treated. But they are seeing the opposite. They are seeing a country where people are living in IDP camps as displaced people. They are seeing a country where it is hard to put food on the table. They are seeing a country where civil servants go without salaries for months. And so these are what people are telling us.
But what about some words of wisdom from President Salva Kiir? Maya did earlier today when the government was in fact being extended to another 3 years, when he said, among other things, and I quote, "On the eve of the fourth anniversary of our national independence, I have the distinct honor to salute you in the name of our freedom and dignity." How does that feel to you and to many among your audience?
It is indeed a dignifying moment for all the people of South Sudan, because as I said earlier, when the flag was raised up, there was a sense of belonging, a sense of identity, and a sense of dignity. And that sense is still there. But you know what? If you have no capacity to live as you want to, then you think otherwise. And this is what people are, that's why people are talking and saying we want an end to this war. Because yes, we are dignified, we are proud, but the conditions around us does not encourage us to say we are happy.
What about reaction from one of his former key colleagues, and that is, of course, Dr. Riek Machar, who has asked the president, in fact, to resign immediately, saying his term ends today?
This is not the first time Dr. Riek Machar is saying that. But at this point, when people are looking for peace, that statement might not even settle well with the majority of people who are looking for peace, who are yearning for peace, because at this point, the whole country is saying they want peace. They want an end to the violence.
What about the fact that Riek Machar goes on to say that the extension of the government today, in fact, around midnight, would in fact in many ways be unconstitutional?
A lot of analysts in the region have been saying that. They're saying the only way there will be peace in South Sudan is when the two sides sign a peace deal and agree to work together. Extending the mandate of the government will not bring peace, because the rebels are not happy with that, because they call it illegitimacy. They are saying the mandate of the government is in the hands of the people. The government cannot extend itself. That is the argument of the rebels. But the government is arguing that they do not want to leave a power vacuum. They want the government to continue so that they can provide security, they can provide services, and until the time for peace comes. So there is two arguments to this situation.
Any particular reason why so far those two key groups have not been able to cut a deal?
To make it a little bit home, it's power. Both sides are hungry for power. You have seen the arguments from both sides. President Kiir says he is a legitimate elected leader of the country. He cannot just live like that and hand it over to a rebel. Riek Machar is saying President Kiir is illegitimate. He should step down. So the bottom line here is power.
But what about the mediation role by the regional grouping IGAD, for example, and the African Union, for that matter, and the international community?
To start with the international community, there is a little bit of, there's a lot of frustration from the international community. They have poured in a lot of money to help the humanitarian situation, to avert crisis in the country. They are still doing that, but people are saying this has to come to an end. And the IGAD countries are also saying they need to be peace in the country. In fact, there is a proposal that has been given to the two warring parties to study so that they can come back to the negotiating table. But today at the South Sudan Parliament, when President Kiir was addressing lawmakers, he said two important things. One, he said the proposal is talking about demilitarizing Juba. That means Juba town should be under the African Union, IGAD, and UN forces. And he said that is like handing yourself over to someone else to control you. He said that's a red line. It will not happen. He also said there is a proposal about governance, that 53% of governance in the areas affected by the conflict, that is Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Unity, will go to the rebels. And he told the parliamentarians that if you give Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Unity to the rebels, you are actually encouraging a breakaway of the country. They will ask for self-autonomy. So he said that is also another red line. So an indication of those statements is sending a clear message that the government is not even happy with this proposal that was passed to them of late. And we are yet to see when they will go back to Addis Ababa, because up to now, there is no set date for the resumption of the negotiations.
I see. Well, thank you very much, John, for your insight.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, joining us here in our Washington studios are three distinguished guests. Ambassador Barker Wall, Deputy Head of Mission of the Embassy of the Republic of South Sudan to the United States. Ruth Mwoktang, SPROM/SPROA in opposition, representative to the United States and a former member of parliament in the South Sudan National Legislative Assembly. And last but not least, Noah Gottschalk, Senior Policy Advisor for Humanitarian Response at Oxfam America, based here in the nation's capital, where he focuses on Sudan, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Syria, as well as broader conflict and human rights issues. Well, gentlemen, I have to say honestly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
Thank you very much. Okay.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Now, in fact, we do have a few minutes to interact before the break. Let me come to you, Mr. Ambassador. How does it feel on the eve, of course, on the fourth anniversary of your independence? Is there anything, frankly, to celebrate, given that a lot of people on the ground, frankly, probably you're talking about people with empty stomachs here?
Thank you, Shaka. Mm-hmm. I just want to take this opportunity to thank the Voice of America for hosting this discussion. I also want to take this opportunity just as a way of answering your question to congratulate the people of South Sudan for the fourth independence, and to say that there is something to celebrate. In fact, this independence came after 5 decades of a struggle and after having lost over 2 million South Sudanese people. The sacrifice of our people is what resulted in the independence we are celebrating tomorrow. It is not something that started 4 years ago. It is something we started since 1955. The people of South Sudan all over the world have something to celebrate, because it is about celebrating the sacrifices of our people, celebrating an achievement that our people have been fighting for over 5 decades.
I see. Well, now we'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA South Sudan. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
The conflict in South Sudan started in December 2013 when President Salva Kiir accused former Vice President Riek Machar and his colleagues of plotting to overthrow his government. Machar denied the allegations and accused Kiir of carrying out violent purges. The accusation sparked violence among supporters of the groups, causing the death of thousands and leaving millions displaced. Several NGOs have accused both warring sides of committing crimes against humanity, including mutilation, rape, and extrajudicial executions. President Kiir has warned that the country is at risk of famine if the violence continues. UN Security Council issued sanctions based on a report alleging the South Sudan People's Liberation Army, SPLA, the SPLA in opposition, and its affiliated armed groups may have committed widespread human rights abuses.
I wanted to present music and a side of American culture that is most important to me, that is a part of who I am. They're gonna get some incredible performances. That's one of the things I love, bringing these artists in so you can get to see them do what they do. It's soul music, and that's what music is. It's that which comes from the soul.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiu Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you immediately. Ruth, of course, a former member of parliament and perhaps the youngest member of parliament the last time I checked in Juba. Is that correct?
Yes.
How does it feel for you?
It was very good. Actually, they called me the last born of the parliament.
The last
and it's good.
It's good.
The youngest in the National Assembly.
So talk to us a bit about your feelings about celebrating the fourth anniversary of independence away from home. You are now in Washington.
I think there is nothing bad about celebrating the independence. And of course, South Sudan had not had peace after the independence. Mm. However, the desire for the people of South Sudan for total independence from Sudan was and will always remain unchangeable. Of course, the only thing that they should regret is electing Salva Kiir as their president, mm-hmm. who later on tend to kill them. There is nothing bad about celebrating it. Even though I'm not in the country, I'm in the mood of celebration.
You're not in the country, and of course, you're not a diplomat. You don't have that, privilege of being a diplomat like your colleague here back. What about the man, Cherubino Kwanyuen Bor, the man who shot the first bullet in Bor, Jongle, in Jongle, in fact. What would he think or how would he feel if we came back today? Cherubino Kwanyuen Bor.
I believe if Cherubino and those of William Nyon, those of Guy Tut, those of Garang, if they come back today and they find how South Sudan is, they will not be very happy. Because this is what they have not fought for.
What did they fight for, to the
best
of your knowledge?
They fight for the freedom of the people of South Sudan.
And you have freedom from Khartoum, but not freedom from yourself?
We have a freedom from Khartoum, but we are not yet free.
I see. What about you, Nuwa? Talk to us about your perspective. You're not, of course, from what I know, you are not a citizen of the Republic of South Sudan, but you are very familiar with what is happening there. From what you have been able to see, do you think the ordinary South Sudanese human being has reasons for celebrating tomorrow as the fourth anniversary of independence?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here. As you say, I'm not a South Sudanese, but having worked with South Sudanese and lived in South Sudan and spent time working on South Sudan for almost 15 years now, I always feel like South Sudan is like a second home. So from that perspective, it is terribly sad to see what's happening, just deeply tragic to see what's going on. At the same time, you know, I think through all the adversities that South Sudan has suffered, not just in the last year and a half, but over the decades, as the ambassador has pointed out, South Sudanese people have been strong, they've been resilient, and it's that strength and that resilience and that ultimately that sense of hope for the future that I celebrate, and I think we celebrate tomorrow for the anniversary.
But what about if someone were to ask you, what are they really fighting for? Because normally you hear that people are fighting because of the scarcity of resources. This is not the situation in as far as South Sudan is concerned. You have a huge, an enormous country that, frankly, is not under cultivation. South Sudan could be the breadbasket of the Middle East. You have oil, you have gold, you name it, and you have very few people to boot. What are they fighting for? Why can't they sit in a room and figure out how to equitably distribute these God-given resources?
I think that's an incredibly important question, and that's exactly the question that South Sudanese people ask me, and I hear themselves asking whenever I travel to South Sudan, whether I'm in Juba in the capital, whether I'm in any government-controlled areas or opposition-controlled areas, even visiting people in, you know, refugee camps in Uganda, outside of the country, people are asking that same question: what is this about, why is this happening, and how are we going to get back to peace? And I think that's the question that we really need to answer, because this is a man-made crisis, and that's, in some ways, that's very frustrating, but also that's something that's positive. Because it's man-made, it can be solved by men and by women to bring peace to the country.
Interesting. Well, Ambassador Bakwora, anybody, frankly, that is familiar with your country, is familiar with the politics of that region, will join you in agreeing that you have a right to celebrate independence from Khartoum. Because, frankly, Khartoum did not do anything to develop that part of the Sudan. But having done that, what do you tell anybody, frankly, who will ask you, very simply, what are you fighting for?
Thank you, Shaka. I think this is a very good question. But before I answer that, I want to also recap on the question you have asked my colleague about how will our late leaders, some people like Karbine Kwanyin, how would they feel if they come back? I think
Shot the first bullet.
Yeah, including our late leader, Dr. John Garang, they will feel very proud of our current leader who stood the course. I think it is very important to understand that even after we signed the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, there was no light at the end of the tunnel. And if it were not for the policies and the determination of President Salva Kiir, we would not have reached where we reach, which is the independence.
Mm.
Now, coming to the point of what are people fighting for, I think this question is a genuine and it is a legitimate question to be asked. But I think it should be directed to our former Vice President Riek Machar.
Why?
Because he started this fighting. To be honest with you, there was no reason for this fight to occur.
Let
me just conclude. If it is about reforms, as he is alleging, that he started all this conflict because he wanted to bring reforms, he was the first vice president in the previous 8 years, almost 8 years. So I don't think what kind of reforms he would be bringing.
Did he have executive powers? He was vice president.
In fact, the executive powers were removed from him later on by President Salva when he abused those powers. He started accusing the president and saying the president should step down, following his statement to the BBC. Yeah? That is what led to the executive powers to be removed from him. He had executive powers for several years. But the point I'm trying to make, there was no need for us to be in this conflict. He could have waited. When he started this conflict in 2013, President Salva had two years before he finished his term. He could have continued to oppose the government politically as his legitimate right after he was dismissed from the government and wait for the elections of 2015. There was no reason to drag people back to war.
I see. So what about that, Ruth? I know that, of course, it takes not one, but two to tango. But does the ambassador have a point here? That, in fact, if anything, the fundamental root causes of where we are have to be traced in the neighborhood of former Vice President Dr. Riek Machar, as opposed, perhaps, to some who say, in fact, on the contrary, it is President Salva Kiir Mayardit, because he's the one who announced that there was an attempted coup on December 15, 2013, and so far there has not been any empirical evidence to support that claim.
I don't think the ambassador is right, and actually, you know, there is something that the world did not understand, and even the media failed to highlight, that the conflict in South Sudan has its own genesis, and Salva Kiir insisting on obstructing the democratic reform within the SPLM party, and dragging his feet on convening the SPLM political bureau in order to review the SPLM basic document.
Mm-hmm.
And SPLM national convention was also due in May 2013. Fagan Amum, the SPLM former secretary general, who have now joined the government,
right,
and become part of the government, wrote as many as 8 letters requesting the president in his capacity as the chairman of the party to call the SPLM national convention to adopt the new basic document, and also to elect new people to the structure of the SPLM as per the would-be new SPLM new constitution. So for me, and instead of him, Salva Kiir, acting as a responsible leader, Salva Kiir opted to escalate tension by fraging the opposition from the party, and went on naming people like Dr. Riek Machar and Thaban Deng and Alfred Ladogore and the rest of the G11, while he was actually training his own militia from his own tribe that he unleashed on his section of his people in the country, the Nuer people.
You had Dengiroro, of course, from IBA. You have Rebecca.
Yes, all of them, the 11 of them, we call them G11.
But now they are G10, I suppose.
Yeah, they are G10, and there are many G something.
I saw him with Dr. Riek Machar in Nairobi.
Yes, so with that, I think that is not true. Dr. Riek have not started the war himself. And it was not because of the presidency. It was the SPLM process that self-obstruct not to take place. And by doing this, he went ahead by staging coup against himself and also committing ethnic cleansing within Juba that led to the eruption of the conflict in 2013.
But surely, you know, there are some people who have tried to portray the conflict in your country as an ethnic, really, you know, sort of conflict. Is it really ethnic, or is it in fact political?
In the first place, it was political, because it was a debate within the SPLM party. But it happened that Salva Kiir have his own intention, because while people were in the process of institutional reform within the SPLM, he was busy training his own soldier that nobody knew until the war broke out and they went searching people door to door, killing people. It was actually a surprise to many people.
I see.
Yeah. It started at the political, but it tend to be ethnic, and Salva himself is the one who make it ethnic, because he want to mobilize Denka to stand against Nuer by killing Nuer people.
I think we need to really look forward. Nuer, from what you have seen in the course of your work, what do people tell you on the ground that they would like to see immediately, or they would like, in fact, to see yesterday, not tomorrow?
Well, I think, as you say, we have in the country of about 12 million people, almost 8 million people who are hungry right now.
8 million people out of 12 million people? Come on, man.
Two-thirds of the country. And those numbers are only expected to rise. You know, those are people who are in need of food, who are in need of assistance. And what we're seeing because of fighting that's happening is that while humanitarian aid groups like Oxfam, like others, have been able to reach a lot of people and save many lives, as the conflict is continuing, many of us are being forced to suspend operations, to withdraw staff. We're not actually able to reach people in need. So what people really say to us wherever we go is, we want the conflict to end. They're much less concerned, I think, with how it started, but how it's going to end. They need the conflict to end, and they want to go back to that, to,